None of this made sense. You heard what she told those women. After you shot her stepfather, her mother went crazy. Sharon had been drinking. She was always drunk. Ray just pretended to drink, but he kept her glass full at all times. Her mother was given a sedative and taken upstairs to the master bedroom, the bedroom where you left the letter right in the middle of the bed. It didn't sound as if Blythe went up with the medics. She stayed downstairs with the cops. Victor closed his eyes briefly. Of course Sharon would have taken the letter. She would have read it and destroyed it out of malice. The woman was so jealous of her daughter, she detested her. She would never want Blythe to know a man wanted her, loved her beyond anything. She'd spent a lifetime jealous of her sisters, and then jealous of her daughter. But that didn't tell him why one of his brothers hadn't reached out to him. They must have checked on her. Downstairs, there was a lot of movement. Reaper went to the door of the bedroom to listen. "They're leaving," he reported. "Blythe is going out with the one they call Ricky." That was so like her. She'd go with Ricky in spite of the fact that she was hurting, and he knew she was. Just that small thing told him she was everything he remembered. She was the one his extended family needed. She was the one he needed. "You don't have to stay, Reaper. I'm going to wait until she comes back, and then I'm going to talk to her. If she needs to yell at me or hit me, no one will be around, and she'll feel like she can. And if she wants to shoot you, women are unpredictable and lethal. You should know that. Elena and Lana would take you down in a second." Reaper made his way back to stand in front of Victor. Victor allowed a small, humorless smile to escape. "They'd try. Blythe might try to hit me, but I doubt it. She's not prone to violence like we are. Get going, Reaper. I'll be fine. It isn't like I'm going to get hurt here." If she wanted to shoot him, he'd let her. It wouldn't happen, but if she needed that, he would oblige. Reaper couldn't be there for that. He'd retaliate.
"Don't be an ass. I'm not leaving. She comes back, I'll sit on the roof and wait for you."
He looked around the room.
"This is nice. Wide open. I like that. My woman always liked space."
Which was a good thing. Victor still didn't like walls surrounding him. The more space, the better.
"They have a pretty piece of land here. Never thought I'd be thinking about buying land for myself or for us. We're nomads. No roots."
"I'm staying," Victor said decisively. "I have no intentions of leaving her again."
"She could come with us."
Victor shook his head.
"I want a home. We need one, Reaper. All of us. We'll ride when we want the open road, but we need a base. We talked about this."
He'd made up his mind, told the others, and left it up to them whether or not they wanted to come with him. The vote had been unanimous. They wanted to buy land, build a clubhouse, and set up their legitimate businesses. Sorbakov was gone, and they were going to live openly, not hide in the shadows anymore.
"So we'll stay here. Nothing's changed, Tsar. I've got your back, same as always. Your woman will either accept us or she won't."
Reaper's tone said there wasn't a chance in hell Blythe would accept their club, but Victor knew he was wrong. Blythe wasn't at all the way Reaper thought she was. She had too much compassion in her. She knew fun and laughter, and she gave that magic to everyone around her. How, with her shrew of a mother, he didn't know, but there really was something magical about Blythe. She shone from the inside out. Sharon had been eaten up with jealousy that her youngest sister had inherited the Drake estate and that her daughters had carried out the legacy of the Drake family. He didn't know much about it, other than they all had very strong psychic gifts. He believed everyone did to some extent, although Sharon's gift seemed to be to make everyone around her miserable. Ray had researched her carefully. She'd been the perfect cover, a woman who presented one face to the world and was another behind closed doors. Blythe's records at the hospital made it very clear all the broken bones she'd suffered hadn't been from being clumsy. Victor knew child abuse firsthand. He'd lived in a secret school with no one to help him but himself. Blythe had lived out in the open. She had an extended family, doctors, teachers, neighbors, and yet she'd still been subjected to abuse. That didn't make sense to him. Reaper's hand suddenly went to the inside of his jacket, his body already beginning a turn toward the window. Victor leapt at him, covering his hand with his own, preventing him from drawing the knife he kept there. He could draw and throw in one smooth motion, and he was deadly accurate.
"Keep your hands where I can see them." "Put down the gun," Victor said. "Seriously, put it down. I'm your brother. You're not going to shoot me. But I can guarantee you that there's another brother outside somewhere on that roof, and he's got you in his crosshairs. Am I right, Reaper? Did Savage follow us?"
"You're right, Tsar. And you know my brother. He's unpredictable."
Reaper seemed relaxed beneath Victor's hand, not a tense muscle. But that didn't matter. His entire being, mind, and body was a weapon. He was fast and deadly, and he never hesitated. Savage was arguably worse. Reaper was correct. He was unpredictable and as mean as a snake.
"Which one are you?"
Victor kept his tone casual. He couldn't see the intruder, but he had no doubt Savage could see him.
"Lev!"
"You were just a toddler. You don't remember me."
"Not much."
"You're going to have to trust that I would never harm you or yours. Keep your gun and step into the room. Get away from the window."
He wasn't a praying man, but nevertheless, he sent up a small prayer that the kid believed him. He raised his voice just to be on the safe side.
"Stand down, Savage. He's my brother."
Just for safety's sake, he kept his hand over Reaper's. Reaper's fist was around the hilt of the knife, but Victor prevented him from drawing it. They stood that way, waiting. Lev moved into the room, slipping his gun inside his jacket. Victor let go of Reaper, but didn't attempt to step around him. It wouldn't do any good. He knew from experience that no matter what he said or did, Reaper would keep his body between Victor and a perceived threat, until it was clear there was no threat. Still, he feasted his eyes on his younger brother. He looked good. A man. Tall, broad-shouldered, confident. He wasn't afraid, even knowing there were three against him. Victor found himself a little shaken. He'd never really believed this day would come.
"Victor, everyone calls me Tsar."
"Never thought I'd see you," Lev said.
It was impossible to tell what he was thinking. There was no expression on his face or in his eyes.
"You look a bit like our father," Victor said, what he could remember.
He'd tried his best to hold on to those memories. His father had been a good man, and he wouldn't have liked what Victor had been forced to become. Sometimes Victor wondered if it would have been better to let the bastards in the school kill him. There might have been more honor in that. Live or die. Even that choice had been taken from him.
"I don't remember him."
"You were too young."
Lev held his hands out from his body to show Reaper he wasn't a threat as he walked to one of the chairs Blythe had in a little sitting area. He sank into it.
"What are you doing here?"
There was no welcome, but no belligerence.
"I'm working."
There was silence when Lev studied him. He sighed.
"Can you tell me what?"
"I'm after Evan Shackler Grotzos."
Lev blinked, sat up straighter.
"You're kidding. I was after his brother. Spent several years undercover, working my way up to getting next to him. The Drakes and their men took him out. I was nearly killed. That's when Ricky found me."
"Evan inherited the money and ships, but he already had a major human trafficking ring going. Now he's got the money he needs to expand, and the ships to dump the dead bodies when the really sick fucks pay him the right price."
Victor sank down onto the edge of the bed again. Reaper moved to one side, but never took his gaze from Lev.
"He's the one you've been after all these years."
Victor nodded.
He's the international president of the Sword MC. It's been impossible to get close to him until now. He's always had a burning hatred for Jackson DeVoe. It started in Louisiana with his mother and DeVoe's father. I joined that chapter in order to ferret out more details. I knew sooner or later he'd go after DeVoe. He's the kind that stews on things. He's paranoid as hell and hates everyone. I also figured when he did go after him, he'd use the New Orleans chapter to do it. DeVoe's father was the enforcer for that chapter.
I presume you think he's going to try to kill Jackson now?
I know he is. Jackson DeVoe got married. More, he married the woman Evan's brother was keeping as his own personal sex slave. Evans bragged he had to show his brother how to train her. I don't know what he has in mind for the woman, but he wants DeVoe dead. Before he dies, he wants to taunt him with the fact that the woman is now in his possession.
Lev was silent again, digesting the information. Again, his expression gave nothing away. Finally, he sighed.
You warned DeVoe?
Not yet. I've been given the job of scouting out an area where we can bring the members of two chapters in, a few at a time, to camp. Evan plans to show up once we're all in place, and we know DeVoe's every move. I just got here. When I find the right campsite, I'll send for the others.
You here with people you can trust?
Victor nodded.
My brothers.
That said it all. Lev had better understand what he was telling him. Reaper glanced at him quickly, and then his gaze was back on Lev.
How is that?
Lev asked, his tone mild.
We survived the school because we had one another's back.
He wasn't going to lie. He hadn't seen his birth brothers in years, not since he was 10 years old. He kept their memories, and he stayed in the school under Sorbakoff's thumb to keep them safe for those memories. But the men and women he'd suffered with, he'd watched tortured, were his family as well, maybe more so. He'd die for them. More, he'd kill for them. Lev nodded as if he understood. He'd gone to one of Sorbakoff's schools, but even he couldn't possibly understand what it was like in the hellhole Victor and the others had been in.
We'll give you whatever help you need. Just tell us.
Victor had known his blood brothers would back him. Still, to hear him say it without hesitation made something inside him open up a little.
I'll be bringing the boys by to introduce at some point. We're searching for land right now for ourselves. I've already got a lock on a place that might work to tell the swords to come into camp, but need a few days to straighten out my business here first. Also, a lot of civilians use these campsites. I want to make certain no one will get caught in the crosshairs.
Does your business include Blythe Daniels?
Her legal name is Blythe Prokensky. She's been my wife for the last 5 years and 2 months.
Lev shifted in his chair, a frown flitting across his face.
Our Blythe? You certain, Victor? She's as straight as they come. If she was married, she would never act single.
What the fuck does that mean? She's seeing someone?
If it was that coward, all but peeing in his pants while he ran down the street, leaving Blythe alone with Victor, he was paying the bastard a visit. It wouldn't be a pleasant one, at least not for the coward.
No, but there's a lot of men who've made it plain they'd like to date her. She's been restless lately, thinking about dating. I know because the women talk to one another. If she's anywhere near Ricky, then I'm close by.
Well, too bad for the men who want to date her. I'm finishing up my business with Evan, and then she'll be living with her husband.
He made it a decree, ignoring the warning voice that told him there was a lot of really bad water under the bridge, and maybe it wouldn't be quite that easy. The other voice said he knew Blythe. He knew her. He believed in her. He'd fallen like a ton of bricks because she was the only woman he'd ever run across in all his travels who was genuine. No guile, no lies. She was a woman a man could count on. He'd let her into his narrow world, and he'd tried to give her as much of the real man as he could. She'd accepted that man with all his issues and flaws, and he had them in spades.
You would have known Blythe was mine if you'd bothered to check any of the messages I left you. For all of you. I wanted her looked after. Even before you took the assignment going after Stavros Gratzos, I was leaving messages for you all to keep an eye on her. I wanted her watched over.
There was accusation in his voice. Anger. The rage was close to the surface. He counted on his birth brothers. He'd lived and survived in that school of hell to save them, to keep them alive. He'd hunted the men who had murdered their father. He'd kept an eye on them over the years, intervening when he could if their safety was in question.
Was it so damned much to ask that someone look out for her?
Victor, we never got any messages at all from you. Not in 5 years. Half the time we wondered if you were even alive,
Lev said. That pulled him up short. He'd left dozens of messages, risking his life, needing to hear news of her, any news at all. He'd assigned a couple of brothers from the school to watch over her when they were in the States, but most of their work was done in Europe or Asia. He shook his head.
That's impossible.
There was never a single message from you. We wondered how you knew about Casimir and Lyssa getting married. Casimir didn't even post the notice on our emergency board.
The priest told me. Of course, I would go to one of my brother's weddings if I could possibly get there.
He kept all expression from his voice. Lev had gotten married without him. So had Stefan, Maxime, and Ilya. Gavril was the only unmarried brother, and he lived with a woman. He'd never do that if the woman wasn't his son. The center of his universe. Victor had missed everything significant in the lives of his birth brothers. Lev shook his head.
I'm telling you, Victor.
He trailed off and shook his head again.
There hasn't been one single communication from you in 5 years. No one knew where you were.
Victor raised his gaze to Reaper. He'd been cut off completely from Blythe. Completely. More sins on his soul. She'd needed him, and he hadn't known.
Did you know about my daughter?
He would never forgive his birth brothers if they knew and hadn't turned over every rock in the universe looking for him. Lev frowned.
Daughter? You have a daughter?
His breath escaped in a rush of relief.
Blythe and I had a daughter together. She died. Was murdered before she had the chance to live.
The words tasted like copper in his mouth, like blood and death. His gut churned, and he knew if he let himself think about that child and his woman alone, enduring such a brutal attack without him, he wouldn't be able to function. He had to function. It was what he did no matter how bad it got, and in his life it got bad. Ugly.
It's a long story. I didn't know until now. Just now.
I'm sorry, Victor, Lev said. Really, really sorry.
He rubbed the bridge of his nose.
I just don't understand why Blythe wouldn't tell us about marrying you. She knows we're all Prokhensky's. Why wouldn't she say anything?
Victor couldn't blame Lev for pressing him. In their business, they lied all the time. Blythe didn't. It was that simple. Lev knew her, and he knew she wouldn't hide the truth from them. She would have told her sisters and his brothers, if she knew. How could she forget their wedding, he didn't know. The memory of that day and night was stamped into his bones.
I have a feeling Blythe didn't believe any part of our marriage was real. I met her when I was hunting Ray Langton, one of his many aliases. He was a very infamous pedophile,
Lev finished for him.
He had a partner, but no one could ever figure out who it was. Sorbakov wanted Ray taken down. He knew about the schools. At least that was the rumor.
Victor nodded.
One of the instructors at the school became Ray's mentor. I don't know how old Ray was when he was gotten a hold of, but he knew all the details and was trying to blackmail Sorbakov. It was a particularly stupid move on his part. Sorbakov set me on his trail.
How was Blythe involved?
Ray used women as a cover all the time. He married Blythe's mother. I arranged a casual meeting with Blythe. She went running every day, and I accidentally bumped into her. She didn't live with her mother, so I had to be in a position to meet her parents, and that meant marriage.
You would have had an alias, Lev pointed out. Not a legal marriage.
Victor didn't like the fact that his brother was eager to keep Blythe from him. He couldn't exactly blame him. He looked rough. He was rough. He did like that Lev was protective of Blythe. It was nice to know someone had her back. But he was her husband, and all of them had better come to terms with that fast. He wasn't going anywhere, and neither were his brothers and sisters.
I married her in the church as Victor Prokhensky. The papers were legal, signed, and documented. She might not think it was legal, but I assure you it was. We've got a lot of things to clear up, but that's between Blythe and me. In the meantime, no one can blow my cover. The swords play for keeps, and they don't mind spilling blood. I have enough of my men with me to make a difference, but make no mistake, Lev. Hell's coming.
No one will jeopardize your cover.
I go by Czar, in the swords and out of it. I'm used to the name. Blythe is the only one who calls me Victor.
How are you going to protect her from Evan and the rest of his club?
They aren't going to know about her. Once they're here, she won't be in the equation. What I'm doing has nothing to do with her.
If this was an assignment you took when Sorbakov was alive, he's dead. You can walk away.
I spent 5 years of my life with these scumbags. This is my one chance to get Evan and shut down his operation. I'm not walking away now.
Victor was decisive. The price he'd paid was far higher than he'd ever imagined. His child. Perhaps Blythe. 5 years of protecting utter filth. He was going to complete what he'd started out to do. Lev nodded his understanding.
I spent a good deal of time with Evan's brother, Stavros, and they both have strong psychic abilities. Stavros was terrified of his brother's talent, so much so that he built an entire grid to keep anyone from using psychic talents. It was the only place he would meet with his brother. Evan was a sick son of a bitch. I mean, really sick. He hated women and liked hurting them.
Lev didn't need to tell Victor that. He'd observed the training methods Evan had instituted on the young girls he'd kidnapped or lured into his international prostitution ring.
Did you get a sense of what talents Evan has?
Only that whatever gifts they are, they're strong, and he uses them to hurt people.
Thanks. I appreciate the warning.
The fact that Evan had unknown psychic gifts made his task harder, but it also made him more determined. The man was even more dangerous than he'd first thought. He had the manpower and the money, and with strong psychic gifts as well, he could be unstoppable if he was allowed to retreat back into whatever secret fortress he was crawling out of. This was their one chance.
I have to go. My woman is autistic, and she's looking to protect me from DeVoe. They think the Drakes will force us out. Ricky's a sea urchin diver, and she's comfortable here. We're not leaving, no matter how much they want to freeze us out.
Victor stirred, nearly made the offer, and then stopped himself. It wouldn't be that difficult for DeVoe to come to an untimely end, but he had been the one to decree to his brothers in Torpedo Inc. that they were going to start a new chapter in their lives. Their first inclination would always be to remove a threat to them or their loved ones permanently, but normal people didn't do that. They might never be normal, but they were going to try to come close.
I know I don't know the first thing about relationships, Lev, so I'm the last person you should listen to, but I do know something about women.
Go on.
Lev looked him straight in the eye, daring him to give advice. Victor didn't care whether or not he took it, or if he didn't like his oldest brother reaching out.
If she's autistic, then she's doing something enormous, going to this man and talking to him. For you. She's doing this for you. It's a gift.
Hard for a man to swallow, having his woman plead for him.
I doubt she's going to plead. In any case, she's doing something I respect and admire. If Blythe did that for me, I might want to turn her over my knee when she got home. But I'd be damned happy she loved me enough to do it.
A slow smile slid over his younger brother's face. Ricky would try to drown me if I ever turned her over my knee. You should see her out there on the water. She's...
He glanced at Reaper, trailed off, and then stood up. I'll let the others know you're here and that you'll be getting in touch as soon as possible.
Victor nodded, but didn't make the mistake of trying to get to his feet. He was absolutely certain Savage was outside and that he had a rifle pointed at Lev's heart. Sometimes it was a pain to have the two men dedicated to keeping him alive. If Blythe turned him down, there wasn't going to be much to live for. Not after taking down Evan.
Zar,
Lev tried out the name.
Blythe is a good woman. The best. We all love her like a sister. I hope things work out for you.
Be on my side, Lev. Get your woman to be on my side. I'm going to figure out what happened, why none of you got my communications, why she didn't. I left her so many messages. I became obsessed with checking day and night for word. She never left me a single message. None of you did.
That's not true. Ask the others.
He would. Not that he didn't believe Lev, but if they all said the same thing, that they checked messages and there were none from him, that they had left him messages, then he had to figure out what happened and why. Who had managed to mess up his communication with Blythe? With his brothers? Lev hesitated, then, ignoring Reaper, came to the side of the bed and gripped his brother by the shoulders.
It's good you're here. We all hoped you would come.
Unexpectedly, a lump formed in Victor's throat. He didn't know this man, but he'd known the toddler. The little boy. He'd carried him around and taught him his first words. He'd been so proud of him. He remembered rocking him when he had a fever and his mother was occupied with Ilya. Lev had grown into a good man, a tough one, but a good one.
Our father would have been proud of you, Victor told him.
It was true. He might not have said so in words, but he would have been proud, and he would have showed it. Victor wasn't so certain his father would think the same of him.
Thank you. I'll see you soon.
It was a question, a statement. Victor noticed Lev didn't look at Reaper.
Yes, we're staying, Lev. I hope that my birth family will integrate with my chosen family. They've had my back, and they got me through hard times.
It was an understatement. They'd saved his life numerous times. Lev glanced at Reaper. Victor knew what he saw. All of them looked rough, scarred, dangerous. Lev was the same, but in a different way. Still, Lev nodded.
I hope so as well. Anyone who helped you has friends in us.
That was sincere, and even Reaper had to hear that. Victor nodded.
Call if you need, but don't come close.
I know the drill.
They all did. Each of his brothers had attended one of Sorbakov's schools. They'd all been brutal, especially the one Gavril had been sent to, but at least Sorbakov had wanted them to live. The boys and girls sent to the school from hell, the one Victor had been in, had been expected to die. Sorbakov wanted them dead. He wanted the others to know there was a place worse than the one they were at, one they could be sent to if they didn't cooperate. Sorbakov had videos made of children being punished. Torture was more like it. There were even some videos of the pedophiles violating the children, although those weren't authorized, and Sorbakov either hadn't known they existed or he thought he could keep them contained. He couldn't afford to have any of those videos surface. It always made everyone in Torpedo Inc. uneasy that the videos existed and were floating around in the world of pedophiles. They were old, so hopefully by now they were corrupted and gone. Reaper followed Lev to the window and signaled to Savage to let him pass unscathed. Savage stuck his head into the room after he was gone.
It's a good thing he looks like you. I nearly took him out, thinking he was your woman's boyfriend or after you. The light caught him just right, and I knew he had to be one of your birth brothers.
Victor noted that Savage had tacked on the word birth. They all referred to one another as brothers and sisters. In their world, it was true. They were closer than most birth families.
I appreciate that.
He waved at both of them.
I'm going to wait for Blythe to come back. You two take off.
Reaper raised an eyebrow.
You're getting to be an old man, Czar. I don't like repeating myself, but I'll go sit on the roof with Savage so you can figure out in peace what you're going to say to your old lady.
He hesitated.
I can fill him in.
Victor didn't meet his eyes. He nodded, giving Reaper permission to share what he'd heard. Just thinking about his daughter was a body blow. He wanted to be alone to give himself time to grieve. He needed that. He'd all but forgotten how. His world was about survival, and survival meant feeling as little as possible. But he was going to allow himself to feel everything, all of it, just this once. While he was alone and could let himself. Then he'd try to figure out what the hell happened to his messages. After that, he'd try to figure out what he was going to say to his woman.
Chapter 7.
I always love that no matter what time of year it is here at the Drakes, roses are climbing trellises everywhere in bloom and rhododendrons are going wild. You can always count on finding flowers here, Blythe said, trying to put Ricky at ease.
Ricky frowned.
Lexi always has flowers growing everywhere, no matter what time of the year.
She looked around as if she could see other homes that might have flowers growing everywhere.
Doesn't everyone on the coast?
Blythe shook her head, smiling at Ricky's observation. It was very true. Lexi could grow anything anywhere, and at any time of the year.
Blythe, look at these stepping stones.
Ricky crouched down to run her palm over one of the ancient symbols carved deep into the stone.
These are cool. And very old.
Yes, I don't know where they came from, but they've always been here. I used to come visit when I was a little girl.
Ricky straightened.
That's right. The Drakes are your cousins.
Blythe nodded. A 6-foot-high, intricate wrought iron gate loomed before them. A collage of creatures mixed with raw power was woven into the gate along with the universal symbols for the earth elements, water, earth, air, fire, and spirit. The inscriptions on the bottom of the gate read in both Italian and Latin, "The 7 become one when united." Ricky touched the symbol for water, and beneath her fingers it came to life, blazing gold and green, yet was cool to the touch. At once the gate swung open, as if accepting her. She looked at Blythe with a small, nervous smile.
That's cool. The gate keeps out those who are enemies and welcomes friends.
Blythe didn't know any other way of putting it. It was a far too simple explanation, but it was the closest she could come to what was the truth of the Drake property. It always seemed alive on its own. The porch stairs were as solid as a rock leading up to the wide veranda that wrapped around the house. The space was beautiful and gave off the invitation to sit in the shade and enjoy the view of the sea. Ricky reached out and clutched Blythe's arm as they went up the steps to the front porch.
Am I doing the right thing, Blythe? I know Lev wouldn't like it. He'll be angry with me for not discussing it first. He always tells me everything up front. He knew when I left to go to your house that something wasn't right between us. I couldn't look at him. He's really good at reading people. Especially me.
Ricky was surprisingly strong for being so slender. Blythe smiled down at her. Sometimes Lyssa, Ariana, and Lexi made her feel as if she were an Amazon woman, but Ricky was of average height and stood very straight. Although she had 3 or 4 inches on her, Blythe never felt that way around her. It was the way she carried herself.
Only you can say that, Ricky. All of us have to make our choices based on what we think is right. If your worried level take offense at Jackson and make matters worse between L, Jackson, and all of us, then this might be the best course of action. But you do have to be prepared for some backlash. You'll have to let him be angry.
Ricky nodded several times and let go of Blythe's arm in order to twirl her fingers round and round, a sign of deep agitation. Blythe reached over and gently stilled her whirling fingers.
Take a breath, honey. We can still walk away if we want to.
But she knew better. Eldrake was her cousin. She had inherited all the gifts given to the Drake sisters, and she carried the legacy. She would give birth to 7 daughters, and each of them would have a gift. It had been going on for generations. The house would tell Elle that she had visitors, and they were on the front porch, and that was without the protection dogs Jackson had, 2 big German shepherds that went everywhere with Elle. Still, she would remain to talk to Elle and Jackson if Ricky couldn't bring herself to do it. There was so much at stake. Of course, they had discussed having to move. If the Drake sisters and their husbands went against them, Blythe knew their farm wouldn't survive, and that would break Lexi's heart. She couldn't afford any more upheaval. Even now that she had Gavriel, Lexi was still very fragile. And there was Ricky. She had created a life for herself before Lev had come on the scene. She was captain of her own sea urchin boat, and she worked hard for a living. She would find it hard to establish herself elsewhere. Blythe was determined to convince Elle and Jackson to allow them to live there in peace.
I have to do this, Ricky said, her chin up, a sign of stubbornness. If not for me, then certainly for Lexi, and Ariana's children. The farm is good for them. They're settling in. They need stability as well.
Blythe hid her astonishment. It wasn't that Ricky wasn't brilliant. She was. It was more that no one expected her to take an interest in the children. Yet she had Lucia over all the time. Lucia often brought her younger sisters and brother with her. They didn't like to be away from one another too long. The door opened and Jackson was there. She wasn't surprised to see him instead of Elle. It hadn't been that long since Elle had been rescued from her captor, only a couple of months, and in that time she'd gotten married and her husband had taken her to Europe on an extended honeymoon, although they'd cut that short to come home. Behind Jackson were the 2 German shepherds, looking all business. She saw Jackson's hand go down to his side, and he signaled to them. Instantly, both dogs relaxed and even wagged their tails. Jackson took in Ricky's rigid figure and forced a smile. Blythe could see he was wary, that his smile didn't go anywhere near his eyes.
Blythe, Ricky, good to see you both. Come on in. Elle's expecting you.
He stepped back and waved them inside. Ricky crossed the threshold, but Blythe hesitated, just for a moment. The house was different. It always had been. It would recognize her blood and judge her. In all the years she'd lived in Sea Haven, she managed to stay out of that house. When she'd volunteered to go with Ricky, she hadn't been thinking about having to enter the Drake residence. Now, she had no choice. Ricky couldn't go in there alone. Ricky was so agitated she didn't notice Blythe's hesitation, but Jackson did. He saw everything. Straightening her shoulders, Blythe stepped inside. There was a tiny instance of disorientation, and then nothing. Just the feeling of coming home. She recognized the feeling. She'd had it before, when as a child she'd gone to visit the Drakes with her mother. Visits were rare, and she looked forward to them. Her mother never drank when she was with her sisters, and those times had been the best. She'd always been leery, afraid Sharon would do something terrible, that the reprieve wouldn't last, but she'd held it together until they left. Then, Blythe would be subjected to hours of how her aunts had tried to spoil her and held up their children as being wonderful while Blythe lacked everything from beauty to manners. The drinking would start, sometimes in the car on the way home, and then the hitting. The entryway was wide, tiled with a mosaic design, opening to a huge room.
Blythe!
Elle came across the room to wrap her arms around Blythe's waist and hold her close.
It feels like so long since I've seen you.
She kissed Blythe on the cheek, her gaze moving quickly over her face to assess how she was. Touching her, Elle could read her, and Blythe had to work to keep from pulling away. She had too many secrets, and her sorrows were too close. Elle had too many burdens of her own to carry. Jackson would have told her about Victor. The Drakes didn't believe in hiding much from their husbands.
I've been good, Blythe said. And you? How was your honeymoon?
Spectacular,
Elle admitted with a faint blush, her gaze flicking to Jackson.
I wanted to come home, though. I don't like being away anymore.
Blythe felt the tremor running through her cousin, and she automatically hugged her tighter, inhaling, taking her fears and exchanging them with happiness. Elle pulled back, a shocked look on her face. Before she could say anything, Ricky stepped forward quickly, nearly knocking into Blythe.
I'm Ricky, Ricky Prokensky,
she announced it firmly, sounding almost belligerent, holding out her hand to shake hands. Ricky hated being touched, especially by those she didn't know. Blythe was proud of her that she was trying to do all the formalities that showed respect.
Elle Drake, I know I've seen you a few times, but I traveled so much I never got the chance to meet you properly,
Elle said, shaking her hand.
Please come in and sit down. Would you care for tea or perhaps coffee?
Blythe wanted to hug her all over again. Her tone was welcoming and very genuine. She stepped back so Ricky could precede her into the warmth of the living room. She remembered that room, the mosaic tiles on the floor, the design and the wood. The artwork on the floor was intricate and gave one gazing at it the feeling of being in another realm. There was a deep blue that was either ocean or sky, or perhaps both. Stars flared to life around a silver moon. Some things didn't change, and for some reason, they made her feel welcome all over again, as if she was a part of the Drake legacy. Blythe paused, staring at the mosaic. It seemed to move, darker clouds drifting toward that silvery moon, casting reddish shadows until several rings surrounded the moon, nearly obscuring it with red. In the clouds, she could see more red, and she blinked rapidly to clear her vision, feeling the color leach out of her face. Blood, death, danger. Victor was in town, and the last time he'd come, he'd brought death with him.
Blythe?
Elle asked, her voice like a cool breeze, clearing out the last of the movement on the tiles. She waved her hand toward the chairs. Ricky took an armchair, so Blythe sat in the one nearest her. Jackson waited until Elle was seated, and then he raised an eyebrow.
Tea? Coffee?
Coffee, black,
Ricky said immediately.
Tea for me, Jackson,
Blythe said. Milk.
Same for me, babe, Elle said.
As if I don't know what you like,
he responded, walking out of the room. There was an open archway leading to the large kitchen, so it was easy to see into the rooms from either direction. The floor of the kitchen was also a mosaic tile, the same midnight blue that formed the sky and the pattern on the floor in the great room. A long bank of windows looked out over a garden of herbs and flowers. Blythe could make out the three-tiered fountain in the middle of the courtyard she remembered playing in as a child. She noticed the hand signal Jackson gave to the shepherds as he left the room. The two dogs immediately lay down on either side of the love seat Elle had chosen.
I need to talk to you,
Ricky blurted out.
Both of you.
I can hear you, Jackson said.
I'm married to Lev Prokensky, she continued. and he doesn't have any idea that I've come to talk to you. It's important, though, and I will tell him afterward. He'll be upset with me, but I just felt you needed to hear me out.
Ricky began to rock back and forth. Blythe reached out to touch her arm, just as Elle leaned toward her, pushing air in front of her.
There's no need to be upset, Elle said. Of course we'll hear what you have to say. Lev Prokhensky is the man who called himself Sid and was a bodyguard to Stavros, she added helpfully.
Elle said the name of her captor, but swallowed hard as she said it. Blythe could see her hands trembled. She folded them neatly in her lap, threading her fingers together. Blythe tried again to soothe her, this time from a distance, reaching out to the air with her fingers only, making them dance in a pattern just above the arm of her chair, as if she was playing a song on the piano. It was a song of sorts. Blythe tried to make those around her comfortable. She didn't like them to be upset, not when it wasn't of their own making, and Elle's distress wasn't from anything she'd ever done. Blythe had learned, as a child, that she tended to amplify any emotion or energy in a room. She had practiced using that trait only for positive emotions. Her mother's emotions had been so wild and out of control. Blythe could subtly relieve unhappiness, not take it away exactly, but lighten it. As a child, she had wanted so much to be able to do that for her mother, but it had never worked on her. Jackson sauntered in and perched on the arm of the love seat right next to Elle. He threaded his fingers through her hand and pressed it to his thigh. It was impossible to read his thoughts from his carefully blank features, but Blythe was adept at reading energy, and his was not happy. Elle was tense, but she was careful to reserve judgment. Ricky nodded. He was working undercover to try to get to the top of the human trafficking ring. He told me that he tried to get you off the yacht, but he couldn't, not without blowing his cover. He also said he warned you repeatedly to stay away from Grotzos once he realized the man was obsessed with you. A muscle ticked in Jackson's jaw. Elle glanced up at him, and then began to rub her palm up and down his thigh soothingly. The tension in the room elevated. Both dogs alerted, heads coming up. Blythe could feel the anger coming off Jackson in waves, yet his expression remained the same. She moved both hands to her lap and began to use her fingers as if playing a keyboard, hoping no one would notice. She wove air with the power of the house itself, sending soothing strains toward Jackson and Elle, not in the hopes of persuading them one way or the other, but to ease them over such a difficult conversation with a woman who couldn't read their building tension, or in Jackson's case, anger. Blythe's gift could be used only if her goal was selfless. She'd learned that as a child. Otherwise, the crafting of her song could be twisted and come back to haunt her. Right now, she felt a little sick for Ricky, Elle, and Jackson. That often happened, because when she tried to soothe others, she often had to take on their burdens.
I have a sister, Lexi. She's just beginning to really thrive. Terrible things happened to her, and she loves living here. The farm is doing really well.
Ricky stumbled over the words, and her rocking began to increase in strength. Blythe put a gentle, restraining hand on her arm, but Ricky didn't seem to notice. She began twirling her fingers and then lifting them to blow on them. It was an obsessive-compulsive action she'd worked hard to stop. Blythe closed her hands over Ricky's, and Ricky startled and then turned red.
I'm sorry. I'm not used to talking about really important things with people I don't know.
Elle smiled at her.
You don't have to be nervous. I want to hear what you have to say. So does Jackson.
She looked up at her husband, her red hair swinging around her face, a trace of amusement there, in spite of the subject matter. It was a blatant lie told to help Ricky through a crisis. Jackson stood abruptly and hurried into the kitchen as the kettle began to whistle. He glanced back at Elle, who grinned at him. Blythe was fairly certain she'd made the kettle whistle just to get him out of the room for a moment.
We want to stay here,
Ricky blurted out.
I want to stay. All of us do. But if you hate Lev and want to force us out, we'll go.
Blythe wasn't certain that was the truth. The Prokhensky brothers weren't the kind of men to be pushed around, especially Gavriel. He'd push back hard if he thought anyone was hurting his beloved Lexi. Lev was the same way, only more subtle about it.
We don't want to move,
Ricky added for emphasis.
None of us do, but we don't want a war with you.
Elle sat up straight, looking at Blythe.
A war? Why would we ever have any kind of war? Feud, then,
Ricky said.
I'm nervous and not explaining this very well.
Ricky, I'm cousins with Blythe. She leaned toward them again.
First cousins. I love her. Ilya Prokhensky is married to my sister Jolie. I love Ilya. I had hoped, when I returned, to get to know all of you better. I realize at first it will be a little awkward for us with Lev.
She glanced through the open archway to her husband. Blythe felt the clash between them.
I imagine since you are undercover and you understand why someone doesn't break cover, it might be easier for you to forgive him than it will be for Jackson.
Bringing the real problem out into the room might make it easier on all of them. The sound of glass shattering had them all looking into the kitchen. Blythe was fairly certain the teacup had been thrown, not dropped. Elle waved her hand gracefully, and the glass leapt into the air, molding itself back together again. The fancy cup floated over to the sink and settled gently on the counter. Jackson glared at her.
Undercover or not, a man doesn't leave a woman in that situation.
It was a declaration. He switched his attention to Ricky.
When I see your man, I'm going to beat the holy hell out of him.
His tone remained mild, as if he might have been discussing the weather. Ricky nodded.
I have to admit, I don't understand men very well, but Jonas hit him and Lev let him. He said you had every right to feel that way because he would if it had been me. If you beat the holy hell out of him, not that I think you can, but if you did, could we stay?
You can stay anyway,
Jackson said, placing the tray with the teapot, cups, two mugs of coffee, and a small pitcher of milk on the little end table between the armchairs.
We wouldn't drive you out. I worry that seeing your husband will bring it all back for my wife, and she doesn't need to have that in her face all the time.
Your wife,
Elle bit out between her teeth, has never forgotten one tiny bit of my time with Stavros, so seeing Lev won't make much of a difference. She waved her hand and the pitcher floated, poured milk into a teacup, and settled back down onto the tray.
Ricky, you have no reason to worry that my family will in any way retaliate against your husband. I volunteered to go undercover, and I knew what could happen. I accepted the risks. I wanted that ring stopped. In the end, we managed to get Stavros, but from what I understand, the ring is stronger than ever.
Blythe nodded.
Maxime and Ariana rescued the children from one of the ships they use for their special clients. The ship belonged to Stavros's brother, Evan. He's impossible to make a case against from everything Maxime told me.
She reached for the other teacup and poured milk into it before taking a sip. The tea was perfect, which she thought interesting since Jackson had been the one to make it. Elle shuddered.
He's a horrible man, worse than Stavros, if that's possible. He's the one, I think, who was actually running the ring, kidnapping and training victims. Stavros provided the transportation in and out of countries, as well as ships for clients that enjoyed using and then killing their victims. From what I gleaned, the bodies were dumped at sea. That was definitely Evan's idea.
Jackson put a hand on her shoulder.
Someone else will get him, baby. You don't have to think about that anymore. You're home. You're safe. You're with me.
Elle looked up at him, her hand immediately reaching out to his.
I'm home, safe, and with you, she repeated. I want him caught and held accountable, Blythe, but I can't be the one...
She trailed off.
Of course not,
Blythe said.
We didn't come here to bring everything back.
Elle bit down on her lip.
A few weeks aren't anywhere near long enough to recover from what happened. You aren't bringing it back,
she reiterated.
It never has faded. So, Ricky, now that we've talked this through, are you feeling better? We're family of sorts, and we'll work it all out. It may take time, but we'll do it.
After I have a little talk, man to man, with your husband, Jackson added.
Ricky breathed an audible sigh of relief.
I do feel better. Thank you for talking it out with me.
She ignored Jackson's statement. She'd made it clear she didn't understand men, so she wasn't going to argue with him. She didn't believe anyone could beat Lev if he didn't want them to, so she wasn't worried.
Blythe,
Jackson started. She stiffened. Here came the questions she had no real answer for. She didn't want Victor in trouble, but she didn't want to let everyone think she was going to stay married to him.
Yes, Jackson?
She looked him right in the eye. Elle's hand moved, smoothing down Jackson's thigh, a small brush, exquisitely gentle. There was a surge of power in the room. Immediately, Blythe realized they were communicating telepathically. Once or twice, when she was with Victor, she felt a stirring in her mind when she brushed at the little symbol embedded in her palm, and for a moment she'd thought they could do that, talk to each other mind to mind. It had never happened, but she thought maybe with practice they could have done it.
I thought only the seven daughters of the seventh daughter had psychic talents, but you appear to have a couple of very strong gifts.
Ricky turned toward her, her coffee cup halfway to her mouth.
We all thought that at first, Blythe said, striving for matter-of-fact and conversational.
She never talked about her talent. Her mother was so jealous of her sisters because her talent was not as well developed and over time had faded, probably because of her drinking. Blythe had tried to show her mother one time what she could do, and her mother had slapped her, telling her it was blasphemy to lie about something so sacred. Blythe was nothing. Sharon wasn't the seventh daughter, not the favored one, the one everyone loved. She was a throwaway, and her daughter was worse, useless, pretending to have a talent she didn't have. Blythe had never brought it up again, nor did she ever show her cousins what she could do. She practiced when she was alone and used it in conjunction with her sisters of the heart.
Clearly your talent is strong,
Elle said. Blythe smiled and shook her head.
Not really. More like a little parlor trick. I can boost power, but not much more.
Jackson frowned at her.
It's far more than that. You seem able to take whatever energy or power is around you and weave it with emotions surrounding you, and then you must add something else and make it even more powerful. I've never seen that.
Why didn't you tell me,
Elle said,
when we were children?
Blythe shrugged, and immediately comprehension was on Elle's face.
Aunt Sharon, she wouldn't let you tell anyone, would she?
There was compassion in her voice. In the old days, she would have protected her mother no matter what. That had been drilled into her. But she had undergone a lot of therapy, and after what her mother had done, she no longer wanted to protect her. It didn't matter if others believed her or not.
My mother was a very sick woman. Not only was she an alcoholic, but she was eaten alive with jealousy. She believed she should have inherited all the talents just as the seventh daughter had. She was paranoid and made up fantasies in her head that all of her sisters and parents were against her. What talent I had would simply have set her off more, had she believed in it.
I'm so sorry, Blythe.
Blythe took a sip of tea in order to maintain her composure.
We were children, Elle. You especially were very young.
She scared me,
Elle said,
the way she looked at me sometimes. I thought she might try to hurt me.
Had she been drinking, she would have,
Blythe admitted.
but she was smart enough never to drink in front of her sisters, and she could maintain for short periods of time.
"Did you ever tell my parents?"
Elle asked. "Or any of the aunts?"
Blythe shook her head.
"I think children have a need to protect their world, even if it's a terrible one. I didn't dare, although looking back, I have no idea why. Misplaced loyalty. I think I thought I could somehow make it all better. I just needed to try harder."
"Of course that wasn't so, but children think that way," Jackson said. "My mother was very ill with cancer. My father was in a motorcycle club, the Swords. They're a notorious club that specializes in everything illegal and treating their women and families like crap."
It was the first time Blythe had ever heard an edge to his voice. Elle continued to stroke his thigh. He covered her hand and leaned down to brush a kiss on top of her head.
"My father would leave us to go off riding with the club," Jackson continued. "She would just wilt. Sometimes it would take me hours to get her to take her medicine. It was like she only lived to see him again. He had another woman, but it didn't matter to her. I kept thinking I could make it all better, but I couldn't. Children can't."
"I had a really wonderful childhood," Elle said cheerfully. "A fairy tale childhood, as a matter of fact. What about you, Ricky?"
Ricky frowned.
"When my parents were alive, I think I had a really great childhood. My mother helped me a lot. She put me in all kinds of programs, and that made me able to be independent. Dad was funny and sweet. He tried, and he really, really loved my mother. They always kissed me goodnight."
"That's beautiful," Elle said.
"My parents always kissed us as well."
"Not so much," Jackson said. "But I get the benefit of your parents always kissing you, Elle. Now you kiss me before you go to bed."
She started laughing, soft and musical, a breath of fresh air circulating the room. The dogs suddenly came to their feet, looking toward the door. It opened, and Jonas Harrington strode in. He stopped abruptly when he saw Ricky and Blythe.
"Sorry, had no idea you had company. Need coffee now."
"I thought you weren't drinking coffee,"
Elle said, as Jackson rose to go into the kitchen for another mug. Jonas made a face.
"Hannah's on some new kick. No caffeine for either of us. She gets into these healthy bullshit diet things, and I suffer. Got anything sugary, like your cookies?"
He inhaled.
"That woman of mine can bake up a storm, but does she?
No.
She's reading all these articles on healthy living, and suddenly it's no coffee or cookies."
He waved to Ricky and Blythe and flung himself into a chair opposite them.
"Save me, Elle. Talk to her. A man can't live this way."
"Don't be such a baby," Elle said. "She'll settle down in a month or two. Right now it's all about the baby and making certain the two of you are healthy for him. You have a high-risk job, and that has to be making her panic."
"She married me knowing I have a high-risk job," Jonas objected.
"That was before the baby, silly."
Jackson handed him a coffee mug and placed a platter with frosted cookies next to him. He indicated to Blythe and Ricky to have some as well.
"You shouldn't be enabling him,"
Elle scolded Jackson.
"He should,"
Jonas said, scooping up a handful.
"I knew you'd come through, Jackson. Nice to see you, Ricky. It's been a while."
She narrowed her eyes at him. "You stopped me on the highway."
"But I didn't give you a ticket,"
Jonas hastily pointed out.
"You don't know Hannah very well, do you?"
"I do," Blythe said. "She's my cousin."
"She's nice to me,"
Ricky said, still glaring.
"I'm nice to you," Jonas said, eating half a cookie in one bite. "Sheesh, woman, have a heart. It isn't nice to hold a grudge."
Ricky burst out laughing, startling all of them. She scooped up a couple of cookies and took a bite.
"Good. Lev bakes great cookies, but I have to admit, these are just as good. Lucia is learning to bake."
"Ah, yes, Lucia,"
Jonas said. The mysterious children who are related to the Prikenskis in some abstract way no one can explain.
The children Ariana and Maxime are adopting,
Blythe said firmly. She wished she hadn't said anything when Jonas turned his full attention on her.
You got anything to say about what was going on this afternoon?
Blythe drank the last of her tea and put the cup aside.
Not really.
That's not an answer, Blythe, Jonas said. They had us dead to rights. You know that, don't you? His men had us surrounded. They aren't the kind of men you play games with.
Thank you for coming to my rescue, but I really would have been fine.
Since when are you married? Jonas demanded.
Elle gasped.
What?
She looked up at Jackson.
Did you know about this and you didn't tell me?
Baby, I didn't have a chance. I just got home and you told me we were going to have company,
Jackson said. Elle spun back to gape at her cousin.
Blythe, is that true? You're married?
Blythe's first inclination was to deny everything, then to just shrug casually and tell them she was filing for divorce. But for some inexplicable reason, she felt like that was betraying Victor. She sighed instead.
Yes, it seems I am. Tell me everything,
Elle demanded. Blythe sank back in her chair, avoiding both Jackson's and Jonas's eyes. She concentrated on her cousin.
I met him a few years ago. We literally ran into each other while we were both jogging. I would have fallen, but he caught me before I hit the ground. We ended up laughing and then running together.
Jackson made a noise in the back of his throat and looked at Jonas.
What?
Elle asked, glaring at both of them.
Classic pickup, Jonas said. Absolutely, Jackson agreed.
So, did you use it often?
Elle asked Jackson, the frost in her voice warning him that the answer had better be no. Blythe noticed Jonas grinning behind his hand as he shoveled in more cookies and took a gulp of black coffee.
Of course not, Elle, Jackson said. I just know that some men use that sort of thing.
Are you implying my cousin's husband wasn't sincerely interested in her?
Of course not. Any man would be interested in Blythe.
Well, with the exception of me, only because I'm interested in you.
Give it up,
Jonas said, shaking his head, still grinning.
You aren't going to win no matter what you say. The Drakes have it down to a science.
What do we have down to a science, Jonas Harrington?
Elle switched her glare from Jackson to Jonas.
The craziness, that's what, Jonas said. I don't let it get to me, he informed Jackson. I grew up with them, and there's nothing to be done but ignore them when they get like this.
Elle waved her hand toward the telephone, and Jonas groaned.
You little brat. I can't believe you'd rat me out to your sister.
You so deserve it,
Elle said. The phone rang, and Jonas was up immediately, snagging two handfuls of cookies, chugging the last of his coffee, and heading for the door.
I'm not here. You never saw me.
Ricky nearly fell on the floor laughing. Blythe couldn't help but smile either, although she knew very well that Elle had deliberately saved her from answering any more questions about Victor. Elle was extremely gifted, and there was no way Blythe could hide that she didn't want to be questioned on the subject. Elle had cleverly saved her by turning the attention onto the men.
Blythe stood up. We'd better go. We've taken up enough of your evening. Thank you for letting us come tonight.
Ricky stood as well, straight as an arrow, holding out her hand to Jackson and then Elle.
I appreciate you relieving my mind. I'll tell Lexi that we're all safe.
You're not going to be angry with me when I take a punch at your man,
Jackson asked her.
Ricky shrugged. You can try, but it won't be fair if you're wearing your uniform.
I promise I won't be,
he assured her solemnly.
She nodded. I'll let him know what to expect.
Elle followed them to the door, hugging